la religion. Ma propre parole.
Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Hello, feely humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. My name is Known Wells, and today is episode 107 with my guest, Jennifer Lynn of the Rainy Day Diaries podcast. Jennifer and I explore valuing our own work, giving ourselves the grace we deserve, disordered eating, depressed burritos, and taking time to enjoy the life around us. There is a trigger warning for this episode. Some disordered eating and anorexia are mentioned in this episode, so fair warning there if you are sensitive to those things. Jennifer is a delight, as I mentioned frequently in this episode. She's really fun to talk to. She's got a great mental health podcast called Rainy Day Diaries you should subscribe to, absolutely. And we get into all sorts of things in this episode. Just a real fun, feely chat with my good friend Jennifer about depressed burritos, which is a delightful way to put it. And that's what Jennifer does. She puts things delightfully. So before we get to the episode, though, I wanted to remind you that right now you can sign up for the Feely Human Collective launch team, which is going on right now. If you go to feelyhuman.co, that's feelyhuman.co, you can sign up for the launch team for my new mental health collaborative project. It's coming soon. It's mid-December right now. In just over 2 weeks, in January, you will see the crowdfunding campaign for the Feely Human Collective. And I am so excited, you guys. I've been overwhelmed and full of excitement the past 6 months, it seems like, working on this thing. And stickers came this week. If you're following Feely Human on Instagram and Twitter, which you should, go to Instagram and Twitter and follow Feely Human at Feely Human. You'll see there that I posted pictures of the new stickers that are coming with this crowdfunding campaign, and new t-shirts and all sorts of other fun stuff. Very excited. I hope you're excited too. Vulnerability, empathy, emotional wayfinding. If you're into those things, make sure to go to feelyhuman.co and follow Feely Human on Instagram and Twitter at Feely Human. We're also on Facebook. So go to facebook.com/feelyhuman. And you can follow You, Me, Empathy, the podcast at You, Me, Empathy on all the places. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast if you haven't subscribed, and you can listen on all the places. So without further ado, enjoy this episode, episode 107, on Depressed Burritos with Jennifer Lynn. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a podcast about exploring the struggles we face in our day-to-day lives as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, a shiny brightness cuts through this gloomy, rainy day because I'm here with author, ebullient illustrator, and whimsy provocateur, Jennifer Lynn. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm peachy.
I love that.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being on Yumi Empathy.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. Lots to talk about in this episode. Lots to explore. I recently recorded an episode for your show, which was fun and exciting, and you got to know a little bit about my story, and now the tables have turned.
My evil laugh. I have been practicing.
Empathy revenge.
Hooray.
Yeah, all kidding aside, I'm excited to chat with you and get to know you a bit. But before we do that, we always start the show with an emotional check-in. How are you feeling?
How am I feeling? And I knew this question was coming, so I was trying to prepare myself. I'm a mixture of happy and overwhelmed.
Okay. Why the overwhelm?
Well, currently I'm sitting next to 3 loads of laundry that need to be folded. And I'm working on like 3 projects at the same time. And I'm very overwhelmed with the 3 projects trying to get them done.
Now, do all these projects have different deadlines, or it's all kind of you're making your own deadlines?
So one of them is I joined the Teachable challenge. Teachable is like a teaching platform online. And there is a deadline for that. I mean, the goal is like for them to make lots of money by you making lots of money. But I really wanted to get a class done about publishing, like self-publishing, traditional publishing, like agents, marketing and stuff. So I'm putting the stress on me. There's no like, this needs to be done by like, you know, an overwhelming boss telling me that, but I wanted it done by this week. But I have limited amounts of time because I have a little infant who's now a toddler. And so I mean, getting that done and then getting a book project done, which kind of has a deadline, but not like an overarching deadline. And then all the other random work that goes into having a business and a podcast. It's just a lot.
That is a lot. So this course you're creating is all around self-publishing?
It's so I'm trying to break it up into like 2 different courses. One about like, in a nutshell, it'd be about like the pros and cons of self-publishing and traditional publishing. So you can kind of figure out which one you would rather do. And there's lots of like visual worksheets and checklists, and I want to make them all pretty because I'm an illustrator and I just want them to look nice. And basically like to help you be able to self-publish by the end of the class, or figure out if you would like to traditional publish and figure out if you'd like to have an agent by the end of the class. I include like an email template I've used to like get into bookstores in the marketing course part, and press email for the marketing part, which I kind of made into 2 separate courses. So you can buy it as like a bundle or buy it as a 2 separate course. Teachable is like, oh, well, in order to get emails to like find people to sell your course to, make a mini course. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? What else am I going to create? This is like new for me, which I realize that makes people like new things, and learning new things makes me extra stressed because I feel like I learn slower than others, but I'm hoping it turns out well.
I'm sure it will. I mean, you have experience. You've published, 2 books?
Yeah, published 2 books, a couple others that aren't really out anymore. But it's a matter of like creating content in a way that's easy for people to pick up and understand and want to pay for. Like, that's kind of scary to me to be like, I want to charge enough that like it's a substantial amount of money for how many hours I put into making it and what I'm teaching you. But at the same time, it's like, oh my God, does it have enough? Like, is it pretty enough? Like, do people, will anyone want to buy this now that I've spent hours upon hours in making this?
So I struggle with sometimes of valuing my own worth and time, you know, that I put into things. Do you struggle with that at all?
100%.
Yeah.
And I also struggle with like spending money. Mm. So like I understand the value of things, but I obviously what I do is I sell products. Like I sell, you know, art with my work on it. But I have trouble buying, like supporting other people, because I have trouble allowing myself to buy things.
Mm.
Like, unless it's like coffee or food. That one, for some reason, is a little easier. Not all the time, but like a coffee a week I can do.
Is that, where does that come from? The money thing?
I struggle with that a lot. Like, I'm pretty sure it stems from like money was God growing up. Like, I don't know, like my parents value making money and they saw our value in us. Like in the past, they're like, oh, Jen's not going to amount to anything. Like she's just going to be poor forever.
That's what you're feeling?
No, that's kind of like
what they're putting on you.
Yeah. Like, it's funny because they're, I was raised in a, like they have their own business. They've always had their own business for, let's see, like over 30 years. So my whole almost upbringing, they've had their own businesses. And so we value working hard, probably overworking and like doing well. But their value is like, I don't know. So they're like, unless you make like $100,000, you're like struggling or whatever. But also like they believe in like material. There's nothing wrong with buying things. I have trouble doing it, but they value expensive things, like, which I don't value. So like my theory of life is like, we live a lovely, comfortable-ish life. Like it would be nice to make a little bit more because then we wouldn't be struggling sometimes. But at the same time, we don't need those things to be happy. Like we don't, and I'd value like my husband coming home and not being super angry and stressed and cranky and crazy and 14-hour work days to make more money, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, the trade-off there, you know, I'm with you. Like it seems not worth it to me.
Yeah, because all the jobs that produce all of that money, like, which honestly, I don't even feel like there's that many of them anymore, is like corporate-y, soul-sucking things. In my opinion, I don't really know.
Well, I think that that's a fair opinion. I kind of have that opinion of a lot of different sort of corporate worlds that I've worked in, for sure. I think there's a lot of it that's very soul sucking, you know, mm-hmm. and very identity sort of smashing, you know, and I'm lucky where I'm at a place in my sort of career where, you know, my day job is very empowering. I get to kind of explore a lot and do a lot of things and am supported in sort of my work efforts and even my outside of work efforts, which is fantastic. But it took a sort of a long road of corporate bullshit to get there, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's hard because also like in our society, it's usually like the man needs to make all the money, and that's a two-parter thing. Like that's not real life anymore. Like most couples, not most, many couples, they both work, or you know, one has their own business or a side hustle or something to bring in money. Like I don't feel like every job is like, here, have $100,000 and, you know, sit here doing our marketing or sit here doing, you know, whatever. But at the same time, because of how I was raised, I feel like I need to be a breadwinner too. Like in my brain, like when we first got married, I'm like, I'll earn all the money with my own business and you will help me. Like, or you will watch the kid or you will, like I struggle severely that like, I'm not providing for us.
Mm.
Like, in the way in our society is usually put on the man, and no one's putting it on me. Literally. Yeah. My husband is amazing. Like our theory is like, it'd be great if we earned more money, but like, this is where we are. But deep, 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 I'm like, I find my value in providing and I am not providing. So like, I mean, I'm providing lots of things, just not financially. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. It's like a shift in like, what are you providing? Because there is value in providing. There is value in like wanting to achieve in whatever you're doing. But I think for me, it comes down to like mindset, like what is driving that and why are you doing that? You need to like figure out the why, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's partially because like the side part, which is like, I think the little bit less prominent, but still prominent part is like, I need to change the world. Like it's up to me. Like I need to do this and this is how I need to do it. And I need it to be successful. But then it's like, how do you view successful? Well, I send my son to any school I want and I, you know, whatever, whatever, which I think is the wrong mental approach, but I don't know.
Mm.
Stuff I got to work on. But realistically, he does have to go to school and that money will come from me somehow.
Yeah.
So I need to figure it out anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's lots to explore here. What do you, before we sort of move on, what do you do when you're feeling overwhelmed? How do you combat it?
Oh, golly. So before I had a baby, it would be like go on an adventure. Like, so I've worked for myself for years, whether I was financially successful working for myself or not, that's a different story all the time. But, so before I had a baby, it's kind of similar to what I tried to do now, only it's a lot less stress relieving. Whereas I would pack up all my stuff when my husband left for work and I would go on like a little adventure. I'd check out like a new coffee shop, or I also volunteered with animals. So like that was like, I knew I had like a set schedule. Like I worked with turtles on Tuesdays and owls on Fridays. And
that's amazing.
I know, I miss it so much. If you have the time, I totally recommend volunteering as like a thing to do. Like, and volunteering doesn't like can come in very like many different ways. Not everyone is necessarily as passionate about animals as I am, but there are so many animal like recovery or rehabilitation type places, and a lot of times they need help. And it might not be always be the most glorious help. Like I had to like, you know, clean up after my owls, but after that, I got to take them for walks, which was so awesome.
You took an owl for a walk?
Oh yeah, all the time. Every Friday,
alongside you?
Well, you have to wear a glove and then they walk on, like, they're not walking, but you're walking them. So, like, mine were the screech owls. Mm-hmm. And so you wear a glove and they're kind of attached to your glove.
Okay.
And you're walking them.
Are you holding a wand in the other hand?
Absolutely.
Good.
One with a unicorn on top, because that's what my wand looks like.
Nice. So when you're feeling overwhelmed, you go off on little adventures, you volunteer your time. What else?
Well, I used to. Now when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I try to tell my son to be okay in the playpen so I can try to get some of my checklist off. Basically, when I have to get everything out of my head. So I make like tons of lists.
Hmm.
I usually lose them.
Just like sticky notes type of thing?
I usually use computer paper. Like I love computer paper. I write all over computer paper. It literally, like I'm talking to you, my whole entire desk is covered in various pieces of computer paper, including one with your name on it from last week when I interviewed you.
Hey.
But usually I'll write down everything in my head because otherwise it just kind of floats there, like repeating itself. And I have a bad habit of like when I'm trying to go to sleep, I write emails, but I'm writing them all in my head. So it's not like I'm actually getting the work done, but my head is so stressed that I write them like instead of sleeping. So I do that. And now I try, like I have a favorite cafe here in my little town and I plan once a week now and I gather tons of snacks for my son. And I go only when my favorite barista is there because she kind of like talks to Oliver too. And I like drink my mocha and I like try to draw or like whatever project I'm working on that week. And like, I try to spend an hour there if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I take him out and he talks to Amanda or the other customers and then I give him too much food. And then I try to like, that's like my new version of like going on an adventure and going to a cafe and drawing and working.
Yeah.
It just looks now. I don't know if I have any other. Oh, my other one is during nap times. If I'm not napping, I try to balance how often I'll nap when he naps and how often I'll work since I still have to get my work done. And I don't like sitting at my desk when he's napping. I like sitting on the couch with a pillow on my lap with my computer on top of the pillow. And I watch like whatever I feel like watching and I still get my work done. Like, so usually it's terrible television.
So you're working while the thing is in the background?
Yeah, I have a habit of, I feel more comfortable working with television on, like, because gotcha. I've worked by myself for so many years that television ended up becoming, like, my coworkers. Like, it got so bad in New York when I lived there that, like, there's a show called Blue Bloods that I just love. It got so bad that someone in the show is like, who wants some cheesecake? And I actually raise my hand. I'm like, I do. I'm like, crap. That's bad.
So it seems like today, you know, the current state of Jennifer is when you are feeling overwhelmed, it's work stuff. It's like you have all these things in your head that you know you need to do, or you mm-hmm. say you need to do, or you have to do, and then you need to just get them done. So it's a matter of like defeating the overwhelm is getting those things done.
It's getting those things done, but at the same time, giving myself grace if I like end up not writing all those emails during his nap. Like, oops, I got trapped in like the internet vortex. Like, oh, well, you'll do more later. Or since I've had a baby, it's more like giving myself grace because sometimes I can't work today. Yeah. Like, I try my best. It's just not working and I have to be okay with that.
Does that go over well, the grace part of it?
Sometimes. I've been struggling a lot with social media lately. I'm used to like batching things and I can't seem to get anything batched. So like before he was born, I had like all my social media stuff planned and I had like all my podcast episodes planned and I'm like always behind now. And that is hard. So usually like for part of the day, when we're sitting in the play area, which we do for like 6 hours a day, I'll like try to write out an Instagram post and post it. Like, and then I'll get frustrated with him for wanting me to read him a book, which is ridiculous. But like, I don't know. I try to balance the grace because I'm like, I'm not a bad mom just because I have to try and get this stuff done. Like, it's just part of owning a business.
Right.
Like, but I'm also not a bit bad business person because I have a baby and that's my first priority, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I appreciate that you say that you're working on the grace part of it because, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I'd imagine, one of the things in life that we all sort of have to struggle with and kind of come to terms with is the fact that things shift all the time and things change all the time. And by that, I mean, you know, our approaches to a thing, you know, maybe 5 years ago, could be very different today than they were. And sometimes we want to hold on to that sort of old ways of doing things, but sometimes we just have to kind of, all right, we're doing it this way now. And we're going to make, it work this way because that's just how things are. And it's hard to do that. I've been there, but I also know that like there could potentially be a lot of like unhidden beauty in that too.
I definitely would say grace is extra needed because when those big, I don't like change. Like I so don't mm-hmm. like change that like when my husband wants to move a piece of furniture, he has to remind me that if I hate it, we can move it back. It's going to be okay. Like, mm-hmm. but it took a long time. Like when I first had the baby, I like resented him because I'm like, mama wants to get some stuff done. You need a nap. Like, and some days I do feel like that. But at the same time, like, it's different. Like, that's not how life works anymore. Mama can't just get stuff done when she wants to anymore.
Well, it just looks different.
But it's hard. It's like, yeah, it's hard. Like, everything's different. Like, you don't just have time to do things. Like, you have to really figure out when you can get them done. And then, especially for, like, do you want to spend time with your family? Like, are you, you know, a bad person because you're taking time out on a Saturday to interview people or be interviewed? Well, mm-hmm. no, not really. Like, it makes you a person. Like, that's what I'm, like, a big advocate of now is, like, when you're a parent, you're still a person first. Like, you mm-hmm. have to be a person to be a good parent. And I know I'm a good person, but, like, or more well off human if I, like, do my work and I do take time to, like, do things that make me a complete person, like interviewing people or being interviewed or drinking coffee by myself sometimes, or, you know, it's important. Yeah. Otherwise, you literally lose your mind.
Yeah, you're, it's true. I think you're spot on. Like, we have to establish our independence and identity, you know, as parents, but also as just humans. Like you said, I think that's really important and wise. I want to delve into your story a bit deeper, Jennifer. Can you give me a couple of sort of seminal moments from your childhood, sort of young adulthood, just a couple moments that really stick out to you in your memory as kind of being important, as being kind of memorable moments in your life that kind of, yeah, stick out as being, yeah, important, memorable parts of your sort of own mental health journey?
Oh, golly. So do you want positive ones?
There's no judgment here. There's no right or wrong. There's no real positive or negative. It's just things that stick out as being sort of seminal parts of your own sort of mental health journey.
Define seminal.
Yeah, important, memorable. Like for me, like I have many of them. Some negative and some positive. Like for instance, like, you know, my dad throwing the cat off the balcony. Like that was very negative, but it's also like a seminal moment that really sticks out to me and kind of allowed me to look at him differently and kind of change things for me. Or a positive one being the moment where I was in, you know, total darkness, but I realized I needed to change my heart in order to kind of keep living, you know, and that was a really empowering and positive moment in my own recovery. So like things like that,
they
don't have to be as dramatic as that, but you know, important to you.
Let's see. I can only think of negative ones.
Well, golly, whatever you answer with is important
right
and
answer.
It's for you. Yeah.
So my brain keeps thinking about the time that I called myself a depressed burrito. So like the deepest, darkest part of my anxiety at the time in 2009, 2010, I like wasn't functioning very well. So I had to like quit both my jobs. It scared me to leave the house. Like it made me anxious to take out the garbage or even thinking of taking out the garbage. And I kind of just rolled on the floor and cried a lot. So I called myself a depressed burrito. But the interesting part of that now I'm like, I don't know if you struggle with this too. I don't think you do, but I'm not sure. Do you ever feel like, okay, what emerged from that is many, many years of healing and a business, like with a similar mentality to yours, like we've struggled and we've overcome and we're going to help other people like realize the value of mental health and realize that they're not alone. And mm-hmm. like everyone joins hands around the earth and like, you know, we become better people and more empathetic. So goodness came from a dark place, but it's funny because now like, I feel like because I'm not depressed right now, like I don't, I can't wear like the shiny gold sticker that says like, I've been depressed. Like, let me help you. Because like part of it, it's been so long ago that like, I can't remember all of like the little, I don't know if I'm explaining this right. All the little pieces that went around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not explaining this right. anyways, maybe I'll move on from that.
No. No judgment. This is safe. I want to, so you, 2009, 2010, you were feeling like a depressed burrito, which leave it to you, Jennifer, to make a dark thing adorable. but
thank you.
let's explore that. Like what got you there? Why were you feeling that way? I mean, you're saying now that in retrospect, are you saying that you can't remember everything or just things are a little fuzzy?
I feel like things are fuzzy. Like I can remember, like I have like a weird, terrible, okay memory. Like I can remember every tune to every song I've ever heard. I can tell you, I could read you right now every book I read my son without looking at the book. I could just read it to you from my brain. But I can't remember details of things, whether that's like the delicious cake we had at this place or, you know, like I remember core bad memories. I have more bad memories than good memories, which annoys the crap out of my mom. She's like, there were good memories. I'm like, I only remember these things.
Well, that's pretty common.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It totally is.
Oh, see, I'm normal. But also, like, I remember core things, but I don't remember surrounding things. So I feel like there's, like, less value in me helping other people because I can't quite remember, like, what it felt like anymore, which I think that's good in a sense.
What your depression felt like.
Yeah, like, what that deep depression. Like, if I want to help someone not be depressed, I feel like I don't have value in helping them because I can't remember, like, exactly what it felt like anymore, which I don't ever want to go there again. I really don't.
But you have remnants of what it felt like. You know that you don't want to go there again. And I would argue that, of course, you have value. I would say, even if someone hasn't been through the depression that you and I have been through, and I still go through, I think there's value in anyone helping. I think you can still bring insight and you can still bring loving care and guidance to anyone.
No, I guess that's true.
I mean, of course, it does help to have like personal experience with the thing, you know, there's empathy in that for sure, but you can still bring a loving, sympathetic heart that can be very helpful to people.
True.
So I would say to you, Jennifer, stop the limiting beliefs. I've been there too.
I'm writing that down. The limiting beliefs.
So, you know, so that was a moment where you were the depressed burrito.
Yes.
Any other moments? Like, what was your childhood like? You talk about your parents being very sort of business oriented and very sort of achievement focused. Like, what was that? What was growing up in that like? Did it feel like a lot of pressure? Did you achieve well in school? Those sorts of things.
No, I was always anxious. And it's funny because when I was younger, I had a really bad temper and I was defiant. And if I didn't want to do something, I wouldn't. I was really like strong minded, but in like, oh, I don't know. I was hardcore. Like if I was that person now, I think a lot of people would hate me, but at the same time, like I'd be like a force of nature.
How were you hardcore? Like just toward your parents or just in general toward everyone?
That is a good question. Definitely towards my family, but like towards teachers too. Like the story that's always told to me, which honestly I don't completely remember, is like we had like a school trip to something called base camp, which is like you see like the mangroves and you, I don't even remember, you stay in bunks and you, I don't know, do outdoorsy things, which at the time I did not appreciate. Now I probably would like it. But and we all had to get in the car and like the school bus to go back. And we all had to put on, you know, our clothes and our shoes, but my shoes are wet. So I said, I'm not putting them on. And the teacher said, yes, you are. We can't leave until you put them on. I said, I'm not doing it. She goes, well, you sit there until you put them on. So we sat there and she thought she could win. So like 15 minutes went by, 20 minutes went by, and I think like an hour went by. And then she realized she lost. And she's like, fine, get in the school bus. Because I'm not listening to you because I don't want to.
Where do you think that stubbornness comes from?
Oh, my family for sure. They're like your typical like hard, like stubborn New Yorkers, potty mouth, like loud. I'm assuming the stubbornness comes from there.
Was stubbornness and that sort of willful defiance did you perceive that as a badge of honor or a value growing up?
Honestly, I have no idea. I think I was just a really unhappy kid.
Yeah.
And like, I remember negative, not positive. So I remember like not feeling comfortable with who I am, not feeling comfortable with like my personality. I wasn't like, I wish I could remember more from when I was younger. Cause I remember being unhappy and like depressed and like uncomfortable, but I don't remember exactly when it started. I can only tell you like when it was getting really bad.
Right.
But I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't trust anybody. Like I had, even to now, it's hard for me to be like, to not think like if I make plans with someone, they might cancel. Like it's, I'm finally getting better about that now.
Did that
I'm assuming
happen
a lot of
that
happened growing up. I don't remember. I know with my best friend, it did happen a lot. Like even as like a 16 and 17 year old, like I'd be like, I'd literally start calling to see like if she's going, like to remind her she's supposed to be somewhere, and her mom be like, oh, she's napping. She's not going to go anywhere right now. And I'd be like, good thing I called because I would have driven like 40 minutes. But I don't know if it happened like all the time enough for me to not trust people, period, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Even like interviewing for people for the podcast, I'm like, what if they just decide to cancel last minute? Which it has happened, but like with good reason, you know, it's not like they're being like mean or anything. Some things just happen to people. And I even had one guest say like, I was having a complete, I mean, she told me this later, like after I interviewed him, like I was having a full on panic attack. Like there's no way I could have talked to you. Like, so I just said this and I'm like, oh, interesting. Okay. Understandable.
Do you, you know, I relate very much to the anxiety and the really like self-esteem challenging aspect of being canceled on or being quote unquote let down by people you love or people who are supposed to love you. Like I remember growing up, this was in high school, like early high school, I was friends with some people and there's one guy in particular, well, a few people that always seemed to make me either cancel on me all the time, and I would often like cry. Like it always felt very like
personal.
It felt very personal. It's like, what is going on? It, like, is this happening to everyone or is it just me? But it felt like it was just me that they were canceling on and forgetting or ignoring in some way. That was the feeling I had.
Yeah. I had one friend, and it's funny because a lot of us harass him now as like in our 30s. But when he was 20, in his 20s, he'd be like, he would often cancel on you in case if something better came along. So you just felt like you were like nothing. Which I just knew, you know, not to make plans, like not to trust that our plans would actually like come into fruition. But by then, I think it got a little bit, I don't know. No, it was pretty bad then. But when I know it's his personality trait. So I don't think I got as offended with him. Or maybe I did. I don't remember. Like,
do you go into sort of self-esteem mode? Like, does it affect your self-esteem?
I don't think as much anymore, especially now that I have, like, a kiddo. Like, I think it's helped a lot in the sense, like, all right, well, I'm literally, like, I'm dumb, like, splitting my time between family and business. So like, oh well, like we'll reschedule.
Got a lot going
on. We can go on an adventure now or we can nap. Right. Like in that case, like last week I thought I was interviewing you at 1, but I was really interviewing at 4. So I'm like, all right, well, we're gonna nap now. Like and then I'll make muffins. Like I think in the past when it's affected me more, like it was a self-esteem thing. I felt unimportant.
Yeah.
But I don't think I don't have very many friends here. Like most of my friends don't live here. So I'm pretty much my existence of friendship most of the time is like texting or if I go do something or going to the cafe and seeing that person. I'm kind of a boring mom. Like we mostly play at home or we'll go on walks and like every blue moon, if it's someone I really like or trust or like, we'll go there. But all that makes me anxious though, because it takes more mental energy to be like, what do you have laying around your house? Like, or I'm like, can everyone just come over? I also have a thing. I don't know if this is a weird thing. It is a weird thing, but, I like not making a lot of plans because after like, there's this thing in my brain that after hanging out with someone for like X amount of time, whether that X is 15 minutes or an hour, I'm like, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go home. Or like, I want you to leave. Or like, I need a moment to like Maybe it's like an introvert thing where it's like, your time is up. I need to be alone now. But that's rude. You can't do that. So you kind of have to push through that if someone's still at your house.
I mean, 100% relate to all of that. For me, it's definitely an introvert thing. I don't think it's rude or weird. I think that's pretty normal, honestly.
It starts making like a little, I always like making, there's like a mixture. Like I like having people come here because I feel more comfortable and I know my baby is safe in my environment and it's less stressful for me to like plop him down someplace. But at the same time, I like meeting people other places before I had a baby because when you're somewhere else, you could just leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas if someone's at your house, you can't just leave because they're at your house.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I relate to that.
I never invited people over before because I'm just like, what if I don't feel like being with them anymore?
Yeah.
Well, and not always in a mean way. Like, I love people like that I'm with.
But. Yeah. No. I mean, the thing about like being an introvert and sort of engaging with people is that we do. Look, if I were to say to like friends I love and they know me and love me and say, hey, you know what? I am tapped out socially. Like I am exhausted. I really need time alone. Like they would understand that. I don't think that's rude at all, but it takes that vulnerability and it takes people who know you and see you.
Or you could just be really mean to them until they get the hint.
I mean, that is an option. I would opt out of that one, but
all right, I'll check off the little opt out box for you.
what do you think the trust piece is? Do you ever worry? Are you worried that you're going to get hurt?
Again, that's a thing. Like, it doesn't happen all the time now, so I can't remember what it was. But I just never. I think like because growing up, I didn't have a lot of friends. And some of the ones I did have, I would call frenemies. Like, and I can only pinpoint like three specific things that happened to make me like, I don't know. I preferred like just watching movies in my bedroom instead of like going to people's houses, partially because of like, I don't want to be around you anymore. And partially because like, they're mean. Like they did mean things, like, and I didn't trust that if I slept there, like they wouldn't do something to me.
Yeah.
Or like I wouldn't get made fun of or ridiculed in some way. But now I'm a lot more picky with friends, and I love that the internet arrived because and texting arrived because like you could still be close to the people you love without being, you know, near them. Thank God.
So that's what I'm wondering is like you say that this trust piece isn't still a part of you, but it seems like maybe it still is, or maybe I'm putting that on you. You just have protections, you know, you have like these natural protections that or boundaries you've built up and learned to work with.
Maybe it's a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like as an adult, like when you're an adolescent, like, I mean, when you're in school, like there's really, unless you're doing like extracurriculars or know other people, you really have no options. You're either like hanging out by yourself or hanging out with people, whoever's like presented to you.
Right.
And wherever spectrum you are in school land, as far as like table.
School land.
Well, like in our school, it was divided. Like say the school room was like 5 inches, 4 inches of that was popular people. And 1 inch of that was unpopular people.
Yeah.
So like there really wasn't very many unpopular people to meddle with. And most of them weren't very nice because even the unpopular people were mean. But as you get older, like you have a better chance of finding people you relate to. So yes. Like I'm very picky about who I spend my time with. And I'm very picky about who, because I'm a protective friend and I put a lot of energy into like the people I love. And so there's a lot of people I love that I try to protect and there's, but it doesn't mean I talk to them all the time. Like, and then there's like the little core people that I like, you know, trust with everything. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think it's natural that as we get older and develop a bit more agency, and just know ourselves more, it's I find it easier to connect with people because we know ourselves. We know what we want. We know what we like. We know the type of people we want to spend time with. We know what our values are. You know, we know what makes us laugh.
And as an adult, we're more willing to be all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like as an adolescent, like you're still A, trying to figure out who you are, and B, allowing yourself to be who you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like me finding you, like as an adult, like would we have still gotten along as an adolescent? Because like you wouldn't have liked me. Like
I don't know about that. I was trying to trade my raisins for Lunchables.
my mom didn't allow sugar, salt, or fat. So I just bought French fries and a candy bar every day.
I was raised in the same environment with no sugar or anything, and just Odie Wheaties galore. But I don't know where you got the money.
That's a good question. Well, it's funny because I also valued money. So like when I got money, I would use like a little part of it and I would hide it. I would hoard different money in like VHS boxes. And I would hoard candy in another VHS box.
Amazing. I love that. Also, you're beautifully dating yourself.
I know. I'm old.
You're not old. I'm
older
than you.
For all the young people out there listening to the podcast, DVDs were videotapes.
Oh, I love a VHS tape.
Me too.
I have very fond memories of going to the video store and looking at the VHS covers and looking at some of those old like 80s horror film covers, just being in awe and just wanting to watch them all.
Did you like horror film when you were younger?
It probably didn't happen till like my like junior high age. I was never allowed to watch that stuff at home, but I watched it at friends I've always been into genre stuff, you know, like fantasy and that stuff. But I guess the horror stuff came in like into my teens.
That's so interesting to me because I'm scared. Like I'm insanely sensitive. So even if like someone's yelling at someone in a movie, I cry. Hmm. So even the boxes for like scary films, like the trailer for Edward Scissorhands scared me so bad that I couldn't bathe by myself. And I was in third grade. I was like 7.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen it. Apparently it's a great, like uplifting, heartwarming.
Yeah. It's like a fantasy uplifting. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was so traumatized just by the trailer.
Interesting. And, yeah. Like, I'm very different. Like I would consider myself a very sensitive person, but I can also watch a horror film and then go right to bed.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. Like, I feel like half the time my brain is a horror film. Like, like I was raised really fearful, though.
Mm.
So, like, overly fearful. So, it's, like, it's really hard to be, like, oh, I can't be scared of my kid. Like, because I'm going to make him, like, not crazy, but, like, it is crazy. You feel crazy when you're scared of everything all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm scared of thunderstorms. I'm, like, I can't be scared of thunderstorms in front of him because I don't want him to be, like, I don't want him to take on all the fears that I have, you know?
Right. So did your parents have fears or were they protective?
My mom was overprotective, but I was also, like, the sensitive child. Like, and they also didn't believe in, like, weakness.
Mm.
So, like, and again, I'm putting like only negative spin on this, and maybe there was some positive, but I don't really think so necessarily. Like, and as an adult, you can look back and be like, okay, this is how my family was brung up. Like my parents pretty much raised themselves. Like they had parents who weren't the best parents. So they did the best they could with what they know, you know, but
yeah,
she provided like content, like uplifting books and stuff, but they didn't provide, I needed like emotional support. Which my house was more like, you talk loudly, you know, you buck up, you don't cry, like you get over it. Like when I had all my anxiety, like my anxiety is bad, but when I was pregnant, my anxiety was really bad, like the worst it's been in a long, long time. And my mom was like, you should be thankful you got pregnant. And I'm like, I was just in the hospital yesterday because I had such a bad panic attack. Like, give me a break. Like,
wow. Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah. I call my parents good intentions, bad execution people. Like, I really genuinely think they mean well, but like some of the time, not all the time, but like they're very critical and like I'm very different. So like my brother is just like them. So they understood him and they trusted him. Like he was self-aware. He was allowed to go on a bus to like another town and I wasn't allowed to go to the mall. So he was 13 going like an hour away on a public bus and I was 18 and I wasn't allowed to go to the mall by myself.
Wow.
So I don't know.
did you feel when that happened, did you feel like, oh, this makes sense, you know, or did it feel unfair?
They like him better. They've always liked him better, I feel like.
Mm. Is that hard?
Growing up and until probably like the last few years, yeah, of course it is. But like, I have my own family now. Like, I know my husband likes me and he values me and he even values like these weird, you know, not weird, but like the insecurities or the way I work through things makes me.
Yeah, they're part of you.
So I know there's some things he doesn't love all the time, but he loves me regardless. And there's things that he has that, you know, I don't love all the time and I love him anyway. So, but it's hard to be like, I lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
I don't remember anymore.
Maybe some bandits robbed the train.
Oh, no.
The bandits.
That sounds like a fun band name. Is that a band?
The Bandits?
We're the Bandits.
Oh, I'm sure it's a band name. It's got to be.
Use it now.
I mean, yeah, family's hard, you know, but it always comes down to, you know, having the agency to choose the people who are in your life. And I think that is far more important than the so-called value of blood. I think choice is the thing that matters, because choice contains the things that you're talking about, Jennifer, like the willingness to look at someone and see them and accept them for who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you ever feel, cause I know you have like an interesting family life too. Like I've had years where I divorced my family. So I say, and then nowadays which I'm really bad at it, cause I'm an overshare. Like I'm such an overshare that like I bought a turnover the other day and I'm like, I bought us a turnover. It was so good. I ate it all. my husband's like, thanks.
Like, I mean, you saying that, like someone could be very upset, but the way you say it is delightful.
I'm like 100% an overshare. Like, but why was it telling you that? Oh, I've had to learn like boundaries with my family. Like the things that like, because they'll take something and they'll run a mile with it. So if I say like, I don't like that my cat wore blue today, they'll just criticize the hell out of my cat forever, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and they'll forget all the wonderful attributes my cat has because now my cat wears blue and I don't like it.
Interesting.
And so they're very critical.
Yeah.
And they like, which I don't know. It's
they're
hard.
Not seeing. Yeah. They're not seeing like the nuance of that, of that statement, you know, they're just latching onto it seems like they're fueled by the critical aspect of it.
They are like, they're very, I feel like my family is like, they're very negative. And they could very all use a lot of therapy, but they don't necessarily believe in therapy. Like, so.
I love, like I've heard that before, the whole like families or people not sort of believing in therapy, which is, it's not like therapy is a fairy, although fairies are real, I believe.
I agree. But
I mean, come on, like therapy's for everyone.
That's the stigma. That's what we have to break is like mental illness is like the things that are ridiculous. Like you see lots of memes and like little things here and there, but it's like, okay, if you had, you know, diabetes, you would take precautionaries for it. If you have mental illness, why is that? Like, why shouldn't you fix that or help yourself? Like, if it doesn't make sense, like, logically.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, to your point, and I think this is what you were going to ask, is yes, boundaries with my family are very much in place. I've had to protect myself. Mm-hmm. I don't see my father anymore. He's out of my life. And I've needed to create that boundary for my own mental health, you know, and I'm dealing with something with my mom now. You know, if listeners listen to episode 74 on validation, I shared a story about, you know, a pretty very, very upsetting things my mom said to me, or very invalidating. And so I'm sort of working through that right now, you know, like what is my relationship with my mom going to look like now? I love my mom. I think she's very flawed and has, not much capacity for looking outside of her own framework of the world, which in my opinion, when we can look outside of our own frameworks and challenge them, the greater capacity for empathy we can have.
The most fascinating thing about my family is they're liberal. They're like ridiculously liberal, but they're also very judgmental and critical.
Hmm.
So like they're both. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, that's a conundrum.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So, you went from depressed burrito to creating what you called nightly doodles in like 2010. What, can you tell me about that creation process and kind of what you wanted out of that?
So at the time I had two terrible jobs. I worked at a car auction and I worked at a call center, which was terrible. And I can't remember if I told you this on our call last week, but at the call center, when I first got the job, he's like, I don't know if you're like, you're very nice. Like, I don't know if like you'll harass people enough to get the information we need out of them.
Oh goodness.
And then when I got fired, he's not fired, when I quit, he's like, I don't even want you to take the 2 weeks, like, just leave, because everyone's saying you're too mean on the phone and no one wants to talk to you.
Really?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah, just because, like, a mixture of, you had to get a lot of information out of these people. It was, like, draining.
What were you trying to sell?
Basically, I got the annoying part of the job. There was two segments. We worked with, like, people would go to car dealerships, and half the people would call to check on their service. So basically, we got rated, like, it'd say, like, a 1 out of 10 every day for how many people we called. Half of the people there got to call and say, did you like your car service? And they say yes or no, and that's their call. I had to call and say, hey, I noticed you didn't buy a car. Are you still looking for one? What color? What style? What make? What model? What year? What, you know? I had to ask like 1,500 questions, and then I get like a check mark, you know?
Wow. That's hard.
And so it's like, you're not making your call quota. And I'm like, they're like, this guy is. I'm like, yeah, because he's to call and ask one freaking question. Can I have that one? Like, and a mixture of like, I got paid like, I was 23, I think, and I was making like the way less than I made like babysitting. Like, I was making like $7 an hour.
Wow.
And at the end, like, all the friends I had there, like, at the beginning, it was fun. Like, I didn't mind the work as much. And I had like 5 friends there, and we would goof off and have fun, like, in between doing the work. But by the end, everyone quit. Like, I think I was the last one left, and I was miserable, and I was super depressed, and I had an eating disorder, and like, it was low, like, and getting out of bed made me anxious. Like, I was super depressed, and that showed in my work. It was like, by the end, I was so over it. I'm like, I'm making $7 an hour to harass the crap out of people. Like, and they're judging how many phone numbers I do. So I'm just going to dial a bunch of phone numbers and hang up after a few rings. I wasn't a very good worker bee at the end.
I mean, whatever. I don't think anyone can blame you. That sounds like a terrible work environment.
Oh my God, it was so bad. And my very first week, they're like, our bank deposits didn't go through, so we can't pay anyone this week.
Oh my goodness. This seems like a shady operation.
The interesting thing is so during this time, my friend is a painter and like an illustrator. And she's like, hey, just draw like one thing every day. Like, cause I also had like a jewelry business that I didn't like anymore. She's like, it's completely different from your other business. Like, it has nothing to do with your crappy jobs. Like, just draw one thing every day. Like, and you know, like as like a fun thing to do. And ironically, her husband still works at this crummy job. I think that's funny. But, so she mentioned doing that. And at the beginning it was like, all right, I'm just going to draw. I drew a lot of like stick figures holding things. So little people holding big things. Like little people holding a giant radio, like John Cusack did in Say Anything. Like little people, like not little people, but like little tiny stick figures holding an enormous cupcake.
Yeah.
Or like I was obsessed with exercise, so I drew like a treadmill, or I drew like one thing every night. And then I'm like, okay, I should draw things that I need to hear. Like maybe that will help me. And so that's when like Instagram became like the new app, and Facebook was like allowed for people not in college. So I signed up for those. I'm like, all right, people, keep me accountable. Like, I'm going to post something every day. And then an owner of a business is like, hey, I want to sell these. Like, here's how you do that. Cause back then there wasn't as much knowledge on the internet. Like Etsy just came out, like classes were emerging, but like now, like the internet is like a wealth of like how to have a business in many genres.
Right.
So she's like, here's what you do. Here's how you do it. Like, is this like what most people charge? I'm like, okay. So I figured it out and I applied for a grant in my city or my state or city. Sorry, my brain's not working. In my city. And I won the grant. But because I'm a pessimistic person, I won the grant, but I was the very last person to win it. Like, and there was only one person who didn't win the stupid grant. And I was the one before then. So I'm like, man, I didn't even win the grant in like the right way. Like I almost didn't win it. So like I was really upset about it. But because I won it, I had like professional printing. I had like an art show at a cafe. Like, and soon after that, I moved to New York. And when I moved to New York, I'm like, okay, I want to encourage people for a living. Like, how do I do that? And then it kind of was like an emerging cycle of like getting stuck in that this is what you're supposed to do. To do this business first, like this is what I want to do in this business. And now we're here, which is, this is what I want to do. Let's make money happen now.
I mean, that's so interesting because, you know, to compare maybe our stories a bit, I started Yumi Empathy at a time in my own sort of recovery and my own mental health journey story where I feel very, I mean, there's always work to do and there will always be work to do. But I feel good. Like, I feel like I've developed a great amount of emotional intelligence and I've learned how to like sit with my feelings and I've learned how to like ask the questions and I had been going to therapy for many years. Like, and that's when I started Yumi Empathy, but you starting this thing, it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like you're still in your story where you're still recovering. You're still kind of like figuring it out.
Recovering from the feelings or recovering from?
Well, I mean, I guess let me ask you this before we get in there. Like, where were you at with your eating disorder at that time when you started it?
It was all, when I start, it's all kind of blurry. The time exactly. Like, I know I quit on Valentine's Day of 2010. I can't remember when I like was getting, actually, no, I was still dealing with the eating disorder in 2011. I think 2011 is when I started going to like a nutritionist and like trying to figure that out, because I visited my now husband, who was my best friend at the time. I visited him and I had a timer set on my phone because the nutritionist is like, you have to eat a snack every 3 hours. And I was like diligent about eating a snack every 3 hours, like to the point where like I was like a sergeant. I'm like, no, I have to eat my snack. It's been 3 hours. Like,
was that hard? Was it anorexia you were struggling with?
Yeah, anorexia.
So was it hard to have that diligence?
I think it was like, in a way, it was like, oh, I could control this aspect. Like,
so there's still a control mechanism there.
Totally. But, and like, and the same kind of thing happened when I was pregnant. I had gestational diabetes, which is like your blood sugars process, your blood processes sugar differently when you're pregnant for some people. So you end up getting diabetes while you're pregnant, which was one of my biggest fears when I knew I wanted to be pregnant one day, but I was so scared of getting diabetes. That when the stick turned pink, I was like, no, I'm going to get diabetes. And everyone's like, chill. You don't even know if you're going to get it. And I knew I was, and I did. But in that manner, like in the same case, you had to eat every 3 hours and you had to eat a protein and a carb. Like, and you had to eat this specific amount. And it felt like I had an eating disorder. Like, because I hated that you had, I mean, it was, I don't know, I was back to being a sergeant, but on top of that, like the pressure of knowing if I don't do this, I'll hurt my baby. Or right. If I eat the wrong thing, I'll hurt my baby, which you might not. Like my blood sugar, I think it was wrong. Like my blood sugar was never off. Like, so I don't know. But I also like, instead of being overly hungry, like you hear traditionally in pregnancy, like in every movie, the woman's eating like 15 pizzas, you know, I was never hungry ever. Like I had to force feed myself food, which it felt more like recovery of anorexia than when I think I was recovering.
Hmm. So did you ever seek, I mean, in addition to, I mean, you saw the nutritionist, but did you ever sort of process the eating disorder stuff with the therapist or
I had
elsewhere?
I've never, at the time I had a therapist who, I can't remember how long I went to her for, but she broke up with me after a certain amount of time. So basically after paying her $80 an hour, which is an obscene amount of money I did not have as a 23-year-old, she's like, therapists are like shoes. Sometimes they just don't fit. And I'm like, okay, here's your $80. And then I went back two more times and realized, oh, we're not going to work together anymore. And then, but at the same time, like I value, like my particular eating disorder was surrounded by like worth and money. So I didn't think I was worthy of spending money to buy myself food. I did think I was worthy of going to various events just to eat the free snacks they gave out. and so I would like punish myself by like not allowing myself to eat, but then binge eat bad stuff. Like, and then punish, or like bad stuff. Like I would just eat lots of raisins. Like raisins were like, raisins and chickpeas were my foods. It was really weird. And then the nutritionist is like, chickpeas aren't even that healthy. Like, I don't know if you should just eat a can of chickpeas today. Like, she's like, you could put it on top of a salad and like get vegetables with your chickpeas. Like, so after that counselor, I found a few other ones, but like my issue was like the nutritionist I went to was gorgeous and she's never had an eating disorder. So like I resented her, and then she recommended a therapist who was also gorgeous and never had an eating disorder and never been depressed. So I resented them also. And then I went to a Christian therapist, even though I'm not a Christian, because he had a sliding scale. Like, and I could pay him like $25, but then everything's based in the Bible. So then I couldn't tell him half the stuff or like listen to half his advice because I wasn't a Christian.
Right.
And then when I moved here, I saw a counselor like four times. And I knew after the first time, like sometimes you just know if it feels right or not with people in general, not only counselors, but counselors especially. My husband's like, you're being too critical. Like maybe she's like right for you and you're just not giving her a chance. So I'm like, okay, I'll keep going. So I went two more times. I'm like, I don't like her. Like, I don't want to get, like, go to her. And then, I don't know. I never ended up going again just because it was expensive and it's hard to get help because it is so expensive.
Yeah, it is. It is. How are you doing with your eating disorder now?
I think I'm fine. Like, this is, I allow myself anything. I still value, like, every blue moon I'll eat, like a not allowed food, like pasta or something. And I'll be like, woohoo! Like, But I love food and I love to eat and I think New York helped me a lot because like in most of our adventures were revolved around food and I grew like a very huge love and addiction to like, I don't know if the right addiction is the right thing, but like trying all these new things. So like in 2010, I made like a group of friends. I was like coming out of my eating disorder, but I made a group of friends and like every weekend we would go to weird grocery stores or not weird, but like various nationality grocery stores and just buy things that we've never had before and make things we haven't had before. So like that started my love of like trying things. Like I tried, I think over 200 foods that year. Like before that I ate like a toddler. Like I ate mac and cheese or butter noodles and broccoli, lots of broccoli because I love broccoli. And then I grew a love of food. And now it's like our adventures were always revolved around trying things, Ethiopian food or Chinese pastries or, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like a lot of my story is like, I can't pinpoint like what exactly helped me not be depressed or what exactly helped me not have an eating disorder. Like, I base it more on like, which everyone can't do, which is the hard part, is like I was at my ultimate low, worst time in my life. And I moved to New York City. I sold my house, my car. I left my family, my friends, and I moved to New York to see if it would work out with my now husband. And like, so like I flung myself into this new life completely. And it took time to get to like a healthy place. But like everyone can't just leave everything behind and start over, you know?
Right. It's a hard thing to do, but it seems like you won. Not
I
won,
did,
but
like,
you know, you it did work husband. Out.
No, it did, and like I honestly don't know if I wasn't in the lowest point of my entire life if I could have done that. You know, like what's there to lose when I have nothing? Like,
yeah, interesting. So. Out of this, you started drawing, you know, every day and you created a Instagram account. And what I love about what you're doing now is it's, you use the word encouragement a lot. Like what encourages you in life?
What encourages me? Let's see. Why can't I think of the right answer? not
muffins?
The right answer, any answer. Muffins. Oh, yes. Yeah, sweets encourage me. golly. It's funny because I was thinking about it the other day. Like, what the kind of things that like uplifted me or like made me really excited changed once I turned this into a business. Like there's a difference between doing something you love to do because you love to do it. But once you, or no, why I shouldn't say you, once I shift something fun into a business, the things, previous things that were fun or like uplifting aren't anymore. Like,
can you give me an example?
Sure. Like one of my favorite things to do ever before I started this business was to walk around like art festivals. Like there's a really big one all over called, oh my gosh, what's it called? Renegade Craft Fair is like a huge one, or like upscale art festivals. And I would just like admire like the glasswork and the, you know, but once I had a business, I was like, it was more like, oh, I can't do that show. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't know. It was.
Why?
Well, it was mostly like, I learned the ins and outs of it. Like how much it costs, who's running it. Like I've seen a lot of these people because like I've been in this art world for a long time, or like, oh, I make that, or I don't know. Like, I just lost appreciation of just wandering around a lot of them. And whether it's because Florida's not that big and the same people are everywhere, I don't, and, or it could just be that, like, I'm very logical and I'm practical. So I'm not good at like buying unnecessary things. Like,
But, you know, I think there is beauty in being able to take a thing that you love to do and make that thing continue to be a thing we love to do in our vocation. And there's a way to do that, right?
There is a way, but it's like, for me, it's like, so this, it helped me get out of a hard place. And if I allowed myself, I have to sneeze. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Excuse me.
Oh my gosh. Even your sneezes are adorable.
There's only one. I usually have two. Once it became a business, I had a hard time allowing myself to use it as a practice anymore. Because then your mind kind of shifts into like, oh, I have to share this on social media. Like, this isn't good enough to share. Like, what's wrong with you? Or that's not what people want to see. Mm.
So you're just looking at it through a different lens. And the lens that you're looking at it through is a business lens, which means you have to like, oh, I need to take this opportunity and somehow monetize it or somehow share it in a businessy way. But, and I get that. I completely get that. But can't we hold those two truths simultaneously? Can't we enjoy it?
I think we should be able to if we're healthy.
Yeah. So are you saying you're not healthy?
I think that's something I definitely could work on. Mm. Like, now I have trouble, like, I've been, like, aching to paint for, like, weeks. And granted, but I'm not allowing myself the time to do that because the spare time I have, I should be doing work. Since, like, now there's too much work to do and not enough time to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's a balancing act. And I think if, I don't know, I have to work on the, I don't want to keep saying allowance, like the allowing me to do things thing.
Yeah.
Does that even make sense?
It does. It does. It's the limiting part of you. Like, you know what I connect with the most in people is when I see that they are truly authentically being themselves in their craft or their art, you know? And so when I ask you, like, because you're doing beautiful work in encouraging others to feel better about their lives, to feel less alone, to feel less alone in their mental illness, to maybe look at the glass half full for a moment, mm-hmm. which, you know, isn't always reasonable, but it can be a beautiful sentiment. And so, but then I hear you say, and I'm challenging you on this.
I hear you say,
so you're encouraging people, but you have a hard time encouraging yourself or knowing what encourages yourself.
Oh, totally. I'm like the opposite. People are like, oh, you're so happy and uplifting, like your artwork. And I'm like, no, I'm actually a pessimist. And I'm mean to myself all the time. And every blue moon, my husband will use like one of my doodles against me. He'd be like, let things go, love. Let things go. And I'm like, shut up. Like, I'm like, I just drew that yesterday for other people, though.
We are our own worst critics. I hear that. But my heart breaks a little bit for you because I know what beauty you're creating and I know you believe in the sentiment. You just can't take it on yourself or have trouble sometimes.
Yeah. And the irony is that when I sit and allow myself to like draw what I am feeling in that moment or like take the time to let me do what I want to do, that's generally like when the good stuff comes out, like, or the good verbalness that comes out to share, which I don't want to always revolve it around like social media or whatever. But like the other day I posted, like, I'm struggling. Like, it is ridiculous to like need to post this much stuff and create so much content. Like when half the time you're not even creating things that provide content to share, like it's so much pressure. And I can't believe like how many people are like conversing with each other in the comments on Facebook. Like from this post where I'm just like, I don't know.
Because they're seeing you. That's the key. They're seeing you, Jennifer. They're seeing you opening your heart for a moment and not, and again, I love what you're doing, but they're also, you know, we can't all always be encouraging or we can't always be open and bubbly and ebullient, you know, that's just not reality.
No, it's true. And I'm like, I pride myself on, how many of me are there? But
there could be many.
Little do you know. But I'm being like vulnerable and honest like that, like when, you know, in general, I struggle with like, I don't know. I still want to slap something pretty on it. Like, yeah. on the sentiment.
Yeah. I hear that. You know, I think encouragement is an important part of, you know, our mental health. And I'm happy that you're sort of focusing on that in your work, or you're partially focusing on that. Can you give me some examples of some things that, some examples of encouragement that we can give each other, or maybe you've received in your own mental health journey, you know, just some examples of encouragement. What kinds of things help you?
So one of the things I try to always do, is if I'm thinking about a person, I immediately send them a text message.
Oh,
and
that's
sometimes
nice.
It's just like thinking of you, or I send them like a cute little image, or often I'll like feel like I need to really reach out to someone. Like, I feel like they're struggling today, and I'll just send them a doodle or whatever, like something I just have in my phone, like readily available. But like everyone has their illustrated artwork, you know, just waiting to text people. I constantly like check in on people, like especially if I know if they're going through a hard thing. I know this is all around text messages, but I don't really have people here. Sometimes I like to stick like little notes in random places. Like at a grocery store, or I don't know, just somewhere where someone could see like a happy post-it note somewhere.
Like what would be on that post-it note?
You are a horrible person. No, just kidding.
Don't eat like, the rutabagas. Yeah.
You're so astounding. You should buy 2 boxes of cookies. I don't know. Everything about me is about cookies, huh? Sorry.
Don't be sorry. Cookies are divine. I just
or
can't eat them.
Or you're a delightful human, or... The things I share are like in my illustrations, like I kind of go to like the same statements a lot, like don't lose hope, or like you are awesome, or you're delightful, or usually they involve some kind of weird creature I made up.
Because you believe that about humans. You believe that they are awesome. You believe that they're delightful.
I believe that there's delightfulness in everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the world is a hard place, and either I lost my train of thought. I feel like life is a hard place, and like it either gets beaten out of you, or you, as you get older, you like stop seeing the delightfulness. Like I'm I hope I'm making sense. I'm like a big believer in like simple joys. Like I feel like as an adult, like when you're a child or a gen, because for some reason I'm kind of childlike too. Like little kids find joy in like seeing flowers, or like my son like just loves seeing trees. And I feel like you can lose that side of yourself a lot as you get older.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's good to like bring back a little bit, like sometimes. Like it just makes the world a happier place. So I feel like there's so much pressure on us as adults to like do this and make money and eat healthy and exercise and support ourselves and support our families and, you know, good be, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's so much pressure. We put so much pressure on ourselves, and for the most part, all of it is nonsense. I agree completely in the sort of simple joys and embrace, because like a part of that, and this is like gets into like the kind of whimsy aspect of your work, which I very much appreciate, because whimsy to me speaks to this idea that there is magic in the everyday. There is magic in like the overlooked things that we're forgetting, the overlooked joys, the minutia of life that we're forgetting because we're all up on our heads, you know, thinking about our jobs or whatever. And we're forgetting that there's so much magic in life. And we're taking life a little too seriously, maybe.
And for granted. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is, like... I don't know. Like, I find again, it's always around brown sugar. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Quit saying you're sorry.
Okay. I'm not sorry. Good. Not sorry. But like I'm so grateful when I get a mocha, or like I try to like when I have like treats, like this is like a big thing about me. I do not eat and I don't walk and eat things like treats. Like, and when we were in New York, we would get like two egg tarts at like a Chinese bakery, which if you've never had an egg tart, you need to. And my husband would just pop it in his mouth and keep walking. And I'm like, no, that's not what you do with an egg tart. Like you sit on a bench looking at the trees and you drink your tea and you eat the egg tart at the same time. Like that's how you eat treats. Like a little ceremony of happiness.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're so busy. Like we're not enjoying the coffee that we're drinking. Like we're not enjoying that we have the money to spend on the coffee that we're drinking. We're not enjoying like people miss flowers too much or they miss birds too much. Like I'm really big of nature-y and animal things, but like
same,
there's so much pretty things like that people just overlook because they're too busy not looking or they're too busy like piling things or they're too stressed. And I'm stressed all the time too, but like, I don't know. We have to like stop more.
I agree. Yeah, it's all too fast-paced, and I think the sooner that we can step off that you know, that train, the one that is still going, that one that wasn't attacked by bandits, like, I think...
My favorite band.
Your favorite band. I think the better we are, because we're not buying into the hype of these bullshit cultural and social artifices that mean nothing. What means something is the beauty of nature and animals and connecting with other humans and having little joyful ceremonies with egg tarts. You know, like that's the stuff that makes life rich and worth living.
And that's the stuff that like keeps us going.
Mm-hmm.
Like we live in a society where you don't stop. Like I literally, when I was in my 20s, I was raised in a house where you work hard until you are successful, and successful means money.
Yeah.
So like I did not allow myself to sleep at all. Like I had two jobs and I had my own business and I allowed myself to sleep like 3 hours a day. I'm like, I'll sleep when I retire. Like all this stuff has to get done. Like that's just not a way to live.
No, it's not. It's not good for your mental health.
Mm-mm, not at all.
So how has been, and we'll get to your book and kind of the work you're doing with Rainy Days and stuff like that, but Rainy Day Diaries, rather. How has your mental health been as a mom? I know we touched on that a little bit, but what has that been like for you? Has that been challenging? Has it been great and joyful? Like, tell me all the things.
So my journey as mom started with what I said before, which was, I was so anxious when I was pregnant. It was so much pressure to me to make a human. Like, I don't ever want to do it again. Like, it was, I felt like the weight of the world was literally on my stomach. Like, but on top of that, like, I couldn't gain weight. And then the baby was like, they took him out early because they were worried he was 3 pounds. Like, and then he was smaller than like the dolls at like the, you know, mom and dad training class. Mm.
How heavy was he when he was born?
He was 4 pounds, 13 ounces.
Wow. Okay.
Which isn't like, it is preemie size, but it's not, I know it's not like teeny, teeny, tiny. In fact, the smallest baby I think ever, like he was born or she was born half of a pound, which wow. is insane. She just got released from the hospital and I looked everywhere trying to find out her weight and I can't find it.
Wow.
Now. So I'm curious how much she's grown. She was there for 5 months.
Yeah.
But the fears of like, having a child and our entire life changing and like how me and my husband will communicate and how me and my cat will communicate and raising a person and not being able to work anymore. And I was so stressed when I had that baby. I didn't feel bond with it because I was so anxious. They started putting me back on medicine. Like they didn't want me to leave the hospital. I think they were scared I was going to like do something.
Anti-anxiety meds?
Yeah, I was on anti-anxiety medication for years, it's going to be 10 years, I think, or more than that now.
Which
one? So right now I'm back on citalopram. So I've been citalopram for years, but there's no science that says that won't hurt your baby, but there's no science that says it will. So when I moved to Florida, I knew we wanted to have a baby eventually. So my doctor was telling me like the different ways I can go about that. And I decided I'm going to try going without it. So I'm like, it's going to take us a long time to get pregnant. Like, I'm not that young. Like, so I'm like, I'm going to just get off my medicine and like let my body adjust. But I didn't have time to do that because we got pregnant in 3 days.
Wow.
And so by 10 weeks, I went to the hospital because I had a panic attack for like 8 hours.
Oh my God.
And
goodness.
I cried. I was crying for like 8 hours a day. Like, I couldn't let my husband leave the room. Like, I would literally have a heart. I was freaking out. I was losing my mind. Like, if you listen to my very first episode, it was when I was 4 months pregnant.
Hmm.
And I'm explaining why I'm making this podcast, and I'm an emotional wreck.
Hmm.
Like, I was a wreck. And then the gynecologist put me, or the OBGYN put me on Buspirone. I'm not sure. I always get confused the name. So I was on that while I was pregnant. And then I tried to get off it for the delivery. And then I was insane in the hospital. So they put me back in on it before I left the hospital. And then it was too stressful. He was little and I was scared of him. And my husband was amazing. My husband, who didn't want to hold any babies and has never changed a diaper, was like amazing. He changed all the diapers. He put on the clothes. I didn't even bathe my son for the first 3 months. My husband always bathed him. I was scared of him. And I was scared of him for 5 months. And I didn't trust myself as a mom for 5 months. If someone said, he needs socks or he needs to be fed, I would just go, oh my God, okay, this needs to happen. And then finally, he started gaining weight and I started trusting myself. And then people would be like, he needs this. And I'd be like, actually, he doesn't. Like, I know he already had that. But it took me about 6 months, like, where I wasn't insane all the time. And now it's great, actually. Like, I adore him. Like, I adore our time together. I still, like, want to get my stuff done. But, like, we have a good partnership where I'm just like, you have to sit there for a minute. And I have to write this email really quickly. And he's so silly. I made, like, the silliest person in the world. He's so much fun.
That's fun.
He's so silly. He's constantly doing weird dance moves. Like, the last few weeks, there's all this interesting stuff that comes with babies. Like, they practice things that we don't think about. So, like, when he was very little, like infant, he was learning how to turn his wrists.
Hmm.
So when he was going to sleep, he would practice in his sleep turning his right wrist.
Wow.
And so he's learning how to wave right now. So his dance moves right now, he just turns both his wrists up in the air. It's so cute.
That's adorable.
And he loves to read and he loves birds. And he got, like, we just had him pet a flower for the first time the other day. And he was so excited. Like, he's, I don't know. I got a good kid. Like,
that's great. I mean, and, you know, not enough, like, I don't think we can say it enough. The my dog's sneezing in the background. I don't think we can say it enough. Like, the what it means to give birth to another human, like the things that women go through, you know, humans go through, you know, it's not just women who give birth, but people who give birth. I mean, what a tremendous feat, beautiful feat, and traumatic feat that is. Oh, yeah. And so to go through that and then also have the anxiety and the panic as part of that, like, that's so hard. And I'm glad you sort of have come around to the other side and have allowed yourself to kind of see the, you know, you're seeing the joy now. You're seeing the beauty of it all.
I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm, like I said before, like, I'm a huge advocate of taking the time for you because you need it. Like, to be a good person, but to be a good parent, especially if you're a stay-at-home parent, like, you need that time. Like, naps are sacred. Like, every blue moon, my husband's like, can you just do all this during his nap? And I said, no, like, that's my time. Like, I won't be a good mom if I don't take that time. Like, I know myself, but also, like, the ability to make back to simple joys. Like, everyone loves their kids. Like, that, you know, well, not everybody, but everyone should love their kids. But, like, being able to see and to find joy in all these little ridiculous things, like, and to find your own version of those little ridiculous things,
yeah.
Like, that will make the day seem shorter. Because, I mean, I'm home with another human to entertain for like 12 hours a day, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you're an introvert. Like, some of my friends, they go out. They do like play classes. They do this. You know, they go to mom groups and all these things. But that makes me anxious. So I don't tend to do that. And I allow myself not to be that mom. But it's hard to break up the day when you're not doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's other little things like, we play tent, like we go over under the comforter and we play tent, like for a while, multiple times a day.
I love it. I built a lot of forts as a kid.
I'm hoping this is building his love of forts. And the funny thing is, it was built on just laying in the bed for a few more a few more minutes, like when he was really tiny.
Yeah.
Before he can even choose to, like, I would just be like, this might entertain him. If you turn your comforter over so the rainbow side, or I have a rainbow comforter, but I'm assuming not everyone has one. But if the rainbow side is under, it will entertain your baby's eyes. And then you can close your eyes for a few minutes because you're so tired. But now he's like a person. He's not a baby anymore. So now he pulls the covers over us to play tent. And it's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Aww.
And it started with me being lazy.
Well, not lazy, just needing a few more minutes of sleep.
A moment.
Yeah. That's so great. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna plug, and you can kind of talk about your book and your podcast in a moment here, but let's transition into Empathy Heroes.
Woohoo!
This is the part of the show, listeners, where my guests and I each list someone in our lives. Could be an author, could be a friend, could be a family member, could be a character from a movie, someone that is just a great empath, someone who has a great big heart. And this week, I'll go first to give you a moment, Jennifer.
Yes, please.
You know, I posted this week a quote from Jack London that I'm going to read here again, but I wanted to give a little context around what Jack London means to me. So I, as a teenager, I read The Call of the Wild and White Fang and all these books that I was drawn to, stories that had, you know, young men in them out in nature, because I'm a huge nature person, huge animal lover, and I loved kind of being out in the woods exploring. That's kind of what I love to do, what I still love to do. And so Jack London and his characters meant so much to me growing up, and I've just felt very connected with them, and I felt less alone. I felt like when I was alone and feeling down or whatever, like, it brought me so much comfort. So Jack London, his characters mean a lot to me, and I'm just going to read this quote from him. This is from The Call of the Wild. Quote, "He was mastered by the sheer surging of life, the tidal wave of being, the perfect joy of each separate muscle, joint, and sinew, in that it was everything that was not death, that it was aglow and rampant, expressing itself in movement, flying exultantly under the stars." And I just love that, and I love Jack London and The Call of the Wild and animals. So Jack London is my empathy hero. How about you, Jennifer?
Can I list two?
Of course.
Okay. I'm going to pick someone that people might know, maybe, and someone that no one will know.
Sounds good.
So my first one is Sarah Dessen, and she is an author also. And she writes young adult, so YA fiction. And an interesting fact about me is I didn't actually read a whole book until I was 19 years old.
Wow.
I grew up thinking I was really dumb, and I had a very short attention span. So when I was in high school, I never read any of the books. Like, I pretty much flunked out of high school. I know you mentioned like high school earlier, or like school, pretty much flunked out of school.
Mm.
But I thought I was dumb, so I didn't even allow myself like to read things. And, but when I was 19, I found an author I loved who, a different author than Sarah Dustin, but his name was Ned Vizzini, and he had a book called Teen Angst Nat, and it was pretty much all his stories. By the time he was 15, he was published in the New York Times.
Yeah, I know both of these authors.
A brilliant author. Like, he helped me so much, and he struggled so much with the similar things I have struggled with, and I wanted to meet him so badly one day, and that won't happen, because he continued to struggle, and he is no longer here, but he is who I can attribute falling in love with writing. And then the next author I found was Sarah Dessen, and she has many books, and I don't know, her writing, it was like, I hid in her writing when I was depressed and in my 20s, like, and I still reread every single one of her books, like, probably every year, every other year.
Mm.
My pregnancy, like, I reread every single one of her books, and she has a new book that just came out, and she has a movie being made of one of her books, and I am so excited. Like,
awesome.
And so she got me through so much. And she seems like a genuinely nice person.
Oh, that's like, so good to hear.
And then my other empathy hero is my friend Abigail, who no one will know unless they know her. But
Abigail.
Oh, great.
I'm just kidding.
That's awesome. I'll let you know. Abigail. So my son was really small, like I said before, and he couldn't fit most of the time. If you are buying a wrap, like a wrap you wear on your body to hold your baby in, the minimum weight of your baby has to be 8 pounds. And my baby was not 8 pounds until he was like 4 or 5 months old.
Wow.
But he also always wanted to be held. So I was losing my mind. And this mama saw a comment about wraps on like a local group that I'm in. And she's like, I'm not creepy, but I have these wraps that are amazing and they will fit your small baby. Can I bring them to you? And I'm like, oh, okay. And since then we've been friends, and like, she's so loving and encouraging. And I, even though I've only met her in person, like I think 3 times ever, like she just showered Ollie with all these beautiful gifts for his birthday. And like, she's so lovely, and she, I don't know, she's like a calm human to be around.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Amazing. Yay.
Yay. Thanks for sharing.
Of course.
Well, Jennifer, where can people connect with you and buy your book and subscribe to your podcast and tell us all about that stuff?
Okay, so everything is housed in my name website, which is jenniferlyn.com, and I spell my name JenniferLyn.com. And so if you go there, you'll see about my new book, which is called Find Your Rainbow. It came out last December, and it's an uplifting half guidebook, half activity book for young girls to like find themselves and their purpose and get through hardships like bullies and life. Mm-hmm. And I have another book called How Being Stubborn, Depressed, and Unpopular Saved My Life. And that's the first book I ever self-published. And you can find that on my website as well. And that's like the teen version of Find Your Rainbow, but it's more vulnerably honest and less activity book. It's kind of like my story and how I got through my eating disorder and being bullied when I was younger. And it's literally, my hope is that you feel less alone while reading it. You can find my podcast on there. It's called Rainy Day Diaries, and I'm on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or Spotify. And I have an episode about Simple Joys if you would like to listen to it. And I recently, my favorite episode I ever recorded, aside from my very first episode, because I think that's like the winner of the pack, because I was like struggling so much while I was recording, is about my journey with medication. Because I, again, with mental illness, I feel like medication is undervalued. If you had a disease, you would take medicine. And if you have mental illness, there's no shame in taking medicine for that either. So you can find that episode on there as well.
Well, lovely. Thank you. And listeners, I'll make sure all of that is linked in the show notes for this episode at knownwells.com. Jennifer, thank you so much for being a guest on Yumi Empathy.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope it sounded okay.
Oh, it was lovely. It sounded great, and you're a delight.
Oh, thank you. So are you.
Thanks. And to you listeners, I'm here, you're here, we're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other, It's You, Me, Empathy.